Welcome to Real Stories, a show that has honest conversations from the heart. I invite you to sit back, relax, and allow our guests to speak their truth.
So hello, this is Tanya the Communication Doctor and Real Stories. And today I have on my show Paul Wittig. Now, Paul Wittig is the founder of Football Works. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Tanya. How are you doing today?
Oh, it's absolutely brilliant to have you on your show. And I'm really excited to talk to you about Football Works. So I'm going to go straight in. So, Paul, tell me a little bit about Football Works in less than two sentences. What is it?
Football Works is about training and about mentoring. So it's about working with young people, boys and girls at a grassroots level, and using sport, predominantly football, but using sport to try and have or affect a positive change in their life.
So what makes Football Works different from other football clubs and other football organisations?
Well, without blowing my own trumpet, I'd like to say myself is part of it, because football, to use the pun if you like, football's worked for me in my life. I use it to help keep me centred and focused. If I'm getting a little bit stressed, I'll go and play football or watch football or coach football. And having been in football for, goodness, over 30 years now, at different levels, it's something that has brought a stability and a balance to my life at difficult times. But it's also given me lots of positive stories, like friendships that I still have, and created business opportunities. And yeah, it's just been a great thing for me personally. And as a result of that, I felt that there was an opportunity to use the way football had worked for me personally, it could work for other people too. And that's what I do.
That's absolutely brilliant, Paul. And I love the fact that you do the training and the mentoring. And I just want to home in to understand a little bit more about Football Works. What age group do you work with, and how do you get the people to come to Football Works? So what sort of age group is it? And tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so at the moment I run an adults football team in partnership with a club in Derby. It's actually GAD Calcer Sports. They're the largest black and Asian minority and ethnic football club within Derbyshire. Fantastic. It really is. We have kids from under 8 right up to 16, and then I run the men's senior side, and we currently play in the Midlands Regional Alliance Division 2, having just started about 4 months ago. We literally started the team from scratch. So that's the training side of things. The mentoring side of things is where I will literally work one-to-one with an individual or a family and an individual from that family. And for example, the last young person I was working with is actually in Uganda at the moment on holiday with his family. But I would spend literally the length of a football match, 90 minutes, in a number of different sessions per week, as we would agree with the parents, either doing sports or doing vocational things like maybe CV writing or interview practice, different things. It's individual, you see, that's the beauty of it. Dependent on what that person needs, then I tailor it to fit them. So I'd meet with their parents or parent, discuss with the parents and the individual what their objectives are, agree how many times we might see each other a week, a fortnight or a month, and then we would work towards those objectives. So it might be something as simple as getting somebody who maybe has been excluded from school back into a form of education. It might be somebody wanting some support in updating or writing their CV or learning how to present themselves in an interview situation. Again, the undercurrent, because it's me, there's football involved with how I talk about things and the analogies that I use, and sport in general, because one of the things that I really strongly believe in is that how physical fitness affects our mental health and well-being, and also how it can also create that social interaction as well. Sport is fantastic at bringing us amongst and against and with other people. Even if you go jogging on your own, you're going to come across other people. So sport is fantastic at doing that. And we know about the things like the endorphin releases and the other chemicals that when we do exercise, help us feel better. So the other aspect of Football Works, is that, which is a bit that's close to my heart, is also the well-being side, because of family history that has had an effect on my life. And that's something, as I said, that's helped keep me stable, helped keep me focused at tough times, is definitely fitness and football.
Absolutely amazing. You've given us a great explanation there. And I want to kind of home in, because this is real stories, home in on what your personal experience was, because you said that football is kind of a release for you and it really helps you, or has helped to kind of center you in your life. So I just want to kind of go back a little bit, go back to when you were younger, as to your first time that you ever played football. Can you just tell us about that experience, the first time that you realized that you got joy from football?
I absolutely can. So that would have been back in Wolverhampton, living with my mum and my sister, just the three of us. And unfortunately, by that point, my father had already passed away, because he died when I was 18 months old. So I grew up with my mum leading the household, and also some very strong black women, in terms of my aunts and my elder cousins kind of looking after us. Yes. I can remember being probably about 2.5, 3 years old and going to market with my mum, and my mum picking up what I would call one, like these plastic wimble footballs, and buying it for me. And then as I would, I'd help mum carry a couple of bags, not with much in, because obviously I was only a toddler. But I can then remember my mum coming home after we'd been to town at market, got home on the bus, and then taking me into the back garden. She put on the shoes that she only ever wore in the garden, and then she just started kicking the ball towards me. And that's also synonymous in my logo, because that ball was a very old-fashioned style looking ball in terms of its design, where it's white in essence, the ball, but it has black panels on it.
Yes.
And I mean, in today's day and age, it's quite prophetic, really, because obviously it's black and white mixed together and united, which is amazing in itself. But my logo for Football Works is representative of that first football that my mom ever bought me.
Gosh, wow.
And even today, the balls that I use for training are that style of football, where they've got a black pentagon surrounded by hexagons that makes up the panels of the football. So yeah, I was less than 3 years old when I first started kicking a football. I haven't stopped since. And again, as I grew up and became a young teenager, as the thing that happens to young teenagers happens, as you grow and start to become a man or change from being a boy to a man, I started to have all sorts of questions about myself.
Yeah.
And my family and where I came from. And obviously, becoming a boy, or going from being a boy to a man, when you haven't got a man around, because my mom never remarried, is very hard. And so one of the things that kept me centered and kept me focused, but also where I found a lot of positive role models, was when I went through age group football, like under 12s, under 13s, under 14s, under 15s, but then coming up to 16, I then joined a men's team rather than staying in my age group, because I was quite strong for my age. I was quite fast for my age. And so a few of the guys who lived down the street, we lived on, already played football either at a professional or semi-professional level. And one of them invited me to join a team. And I said, look, Richard, I'm too young. I'm too young. He goes, no, you're not. You might not play much this season, but you'll learn so much.
Yeah.
And it's so true. So I used to look up to Richard like an older brother. Because he was great at football, he was amazing. We used to play at the bottom of the street together, matches that would go on for hours until it just went dark, sort of thing. And I joined this team at 15, going 16, and literally, true to form, I barely played all season. But what I picked up, because it was a predominantly black team, it was based out of the Afro-Caribbean Cultural Centre in Wolverhampton, and I was just surrounded by older black men, which was something that was just alien to me, because even growing up, we were very much involved in the church, but my mum had switched from being Pentecostal to being Church of England. So whilst there was role models around me, Mm. Yeah, absolutely. While there was role models around me, they didn't look and sound like me. Yes. So I struggled to identify with them. And this is why, without sounding too self-righteous, I feel it's so important what I'm trying to do and what I have been doing for the time I've been doing it, because I recognise, fortunately, I had a very good family around me, and I believe I had a good upbringing, and I know wrong from right, and I think all people do, but I think sometimes opportunities are presented in front of a person, and sometimes we take the easier option, which can have negative consequences, let's say that. And the only thing that I would say has kept me on a good path is, one, my faith, and coming from a Christian family, but also football. When, as I say, I don't drink, I don't smoke, and I've never taken drugs. But if I get stressed, I've got a bag of balls in the garage, I go and grab them, and even at age 44, I'll still go and take those over a field, and I'll go and kick them until I'm tired. And that just takes everything away. Just all the stress, all the worry, just goes.
You know, you've touched on so much there, Paul, and I want to kind of come back to this whole idea of the working with the Black and Asian community. You said exactly why that's important for you, but I want to kind of home in deeper, because as you said, you experienced so much growing up, losing your father from a very young age. And then kind of working with your mum kicking your first football to you, and you having your logo. There's so much in there. Where football has kind of really become your outreach, has become really important to you, and it's now a part of your life, it's a part of your business, it's a part of everything that you stand for. And correct. You said you generally work with this minority group of Black and Asian boys in Football Works, and I just want to know, you know, what that joy brings, or do you feel this is going to give them a little bit more opportunity? How do you feel this is really helping that particular group, that BAME group, let's say?
Yeah, well, I think, if I liken it to myself, I mean, one of the things that I recognised as I went from, say, 12, 13, all the way up to, say, 20 years old, was that I had to look around and find role models, because it would be very easy where I was living to follow people who were following a negative path, but then had, if you like, all the trappings that you want, like nice car, always going out, and so on and so forth, and all those things that you think are important when you're a young man. Mm. But I, luckily, in the football team I was in, one of the guys, his first name was Paul also, he was actually a senior manager with, at the time, Railtrack. And I can remember after football one time, he said he was popping around to the house, and Paul must have been in about mid-40s at that time, Paul would have been, and he popped round, and I heard the horn beep, and I was like, okay, he's outside. I opened the door, and he's there in this bright white shining Porsche. Now, when Paul would normally go to football, he'd just come quite humbly in a red Ford Escort. So nobody ever knew what Paul had, you know, in terms of wealth and stuff like that. Mm. And he says, my nickname at that time was Jimmy. He said, oh, Jimmy, you ready? Because he was taking me out. So we went out and we had a chat about bits and pieces. But if you imagine, for a young boy growing up on a council estate, and then somebody pulls up in a bright, shining white Porsche, you're thinking, oh my word, what is this? But like, Paul kind of took me under his wing. And he could see that I had, that I was bright academically, that I was gifted at sport, but that just, I didn't really have anybody guiding me. I was a little bit like, kind of, I don't know, swimming in the ocean with not going in any one direction. Mm. And so it was amazing to then have somebody who I can only say in some ways was like a father to me. I don't know if he realized that that's what he was doing. He may have done or may not have done. But then that's where my inspiration comes from, is knowing that in our community, the Black Caribbean and Black African, in Asian communities, maybe not as much, but there's definitely an issue where positive male role models, if not missing, are not as visible as they should be. Yes. You know, and I'm not sat here criticising any fathers from BAME groups who are present, because those that are doing an amazing job, I'm quite sure. But I do work with a number of young men who need strong black men or Asian men in their life, because I've had young men say to me, and I've asked them the question, like, you know, why do you do what you do? And I'm talking about guys who are in gangs here. And they say, look, I know what's right and what's wrong, but I'll do as much as I can get away with doing before I get caught. And, you know,
that's a really important thing there, that they'll do as much as they can get away with doing before they get caught. So that's a statement within itself in terms of, you know, what they feel they have to do. And you're giving them, and what you're doing, I suppose, Paul, is showing them through doing the football that there is another way.
That's the hope. That's the hope. Mm. You know, as I said, it's one, when you join a team, you're never joining 11, 12, 15, 20 odd people who are the same as you. Yes. You know, you're going to have your goalkeeper who's tall or short. You're going to have your striker who's fat or thin, and so on and so forth. And so everybody's different in our team. And like I mentioned, I mean, I'm very blessed in the team that I have at the moment. The diversity in our team is unbelievable. I mean, literally, as I said, one of my players is on holiday with his family at the moment in Uganda. I've got my goalkeeper who's of Portuguese descent. My central midfielder is from Brazil. And I've got South Asian players, Black African players, Black Caribbean players, dual heritage players, and so on and so forth. I literally tick all the boxes. My assistant coach is female. And yeah, we even have one of the lads who signed for our team who has cerebral palsy as well.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, absolutely. And that wasn't even me going out and trying to tick every box. That was just literally, I'd said, look, here's training at this time, at this place. And people just keep coming. Every week from the 3.5 months that I started this team now, I've had a new young man turn up every single week.
That's amazing. But so how do you kind of cope with the cerebral palsy in regards to that boy?
Well, it's not for me to cope, because he plays.
Yeah.
And he plays to the ability level in terms of physically that he can.
Yeah.
He gets involved in all the sessions and the drills. And he even messages, like last week he messaged me on WhatsApp, and he was like, Paul, will I be playing this week? And I said, I won't say his name, but I says, oh, unfortunately this week you won't be playing. And he messaged me back before I could even reply to the next, saying, that's okay, Paul, I'm still going to come down and support the team.
Oh, that's amazing. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about, isn't it? It's all about being a team, everybody working together. Taking
Absolutely.
Part, and I had to answer that question because, you know, in some cases or some football clubs, people would say, okay, I don't know how we're going to integrate this team, but it sounds brilliant that you've just taken it all on and you haven't said no, you've got that diversity and you haven't shut the doors, you've made it inclusive, which is a really amazing thing. Now, just one thing I want to ask you, Paul, another question, because you've said so much in this podcast, it's so rich. I just want to ask you, because you've told me so much positives, I'm just going to ask you if there has been a very challenging experience in football and what that would have been for you.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, a number of years ago, I was very close to a few guys who played professional football at the time.
Yeah.
And they were very much part of my friendship circle and friendship group. Unfortunately, while driving one of their cars, I had a near fatal car accident, which to this day, I still wonder how I'm alive. Because basically what happened in a nutshell, we'd gone out, a few of the guys had been drinking and they needed to get back to Birmingham. I don't drink. So I was like, look, I can drive these guys over and come back to Wolverhampton. On my drive back, I could feel I was a little bit tired. This was the height of winter. I was a little bit tired. And for a split second, I just must have nodded off. As a result of that, the car just drove into a street side substation, hit that, took the top off that, and then crashed into a tree. And because it was winter, in winter, I generally drive wearing leather gloves. What I'd not realised is that the car's underbody was touching live electrical cables at that time. So the whole car was live. Wow. I just I just opened the door, stepped out of the car, crossed the road, and then about 10 or 15 seconds later, there was a massive bang and a bit of an explosion underneath the car. When you see something happen that causes you to realise that that could have been your time, you kind of look at the world very differently, and you think to yourself, okay, I've been through stuff, not all good, but I'm still here. Why? Why am I still here? Why have I experienced what I've experienced, and why am I still here to tell the tale? And I always think to myself, that's because I need to tell that tale and share that tale. And so whilst I don't tell everybody what I've just told you there, and whoever might be listening, that was a real negative experience, because then what happened, I kind of fell away from the friendship group I had. I lost contact with lots of people in the professional side of the game, and a lot of the ideas I had just kind of stalled. I lost confidence in myself. I actually stopped playing football for at least a season or two, if I remember. And then another challenging thing for me over the time was when I got back to playing football and playing Veterans League football, I suffered quite a serious injury. And it was the first physical injury of any significance that I'd had in my career, because I'd torn my ankle ligaments here and there, sprained ankle, but nothing serious. But no, I managed to tear the ligaments in my knee and really damage that, to the point where post-surgery, I was in a wheelchair. And the surgical team that I had informed me that you'll not play football again. And, well, if anybody knows me, telling me I can't do something is all the fuel I need to then prove that I can.
You can.
And so...
You know what? That is just such a powerful statement there, you know, because you've been through so much, and the whole thing of having to overcome that challenging experience and then... to have to be into a wheelchair, and then someone to say to you that you could never play football again, and you love football, it's your soul, you know, it's the heart of who you are.
That's right.
You have to overcome that, and now today you have got Football Works. I think it's just quite remarkable. So just as I bring this to a close now, Paul, I just want to ask you, is there anything inspiring, that any kind of words of inspiration that you want to share with my audience right now?
Absolutely. I mean, again, you know, I've had some really tough times in my life, but, you know, I'm not here asking for a medal or playing the violin. It's like we all have challenges. And I think actually, as I age and as I mature and as the wisdom grows, hopefully, one of the things I've realised is that one thing life doesn't tend to do is throw more at you than you can actually handle. Sometimes it feels overwhelming what we have to do and what we have to deal with and cope with. But life, if we look around and sometimes just take a step back and pause, we generally have the resources we need to deal with what life throws at us, you know? And I don't necessarily mean like getting the latest iPhone or iPad or the nicest Nike Jordan trainers or whatever it might be. I'm talking about kind of the emotional intelligence and the mental resilience to deal with what we face in life. Life is tough nowadays. I mean, I think about my teenage years, and I'm so blessed that social media didn't exist then, because it's like there's no record of my history, you know. It's like the things I did well and the mistakes I made, there's no record of them except in my own mind. And I think that's the point I'd make, is the fact that it doesn't matter where we travel around the world, if we have problems, those problems are going nowhere from us, because they're in our mind. The things that we worry about, the things we have anxiety about, are in our own head. And in the same way that we can imprison ourselves with those thoughts and those feelings, we can also release ourselves from those thoughts and those feelings, and we can be like the birds. We can just be as free as the birds and just fly away. But just remember that if you don't deal with the stuff that is causing you a problem, that it's gonna go nowhere, because it's in our minds. And the other thing I've realized, Tanya, as well over the years, is that everybody's dealing with stuff.
Yes.
And so sometimes when we feel that the whole world is looking at us or talking about us or worrying about us, it's generally not, because everybody's dealing with their own stuff.
That's
you
it.
Know?
Totally.
And it's like, you know, deal with your own stuff, carry your own bags, let go of the bags that you don't need, carry the stuff that you do need, and just, you know, don't worry so much, you know. It's laughter, smiling, having good times and good memories is what life, for me personally, is all about. And that's why I think to myself, I could be here for another 40 years. I could be gone tomorrow. My father was 41 when he passed away. Wow. And to me, that's just no age. It's just, you've not even started, you know?
No, yeah,
and
totally.
And then likewise, my mum was 77 when she left us. And so she struggled through, heartbroken, missing her love for the whole of her life. Now, the rest of her life, I should say. But she devoted herself to my sister and myself. And, you know, as kids, we did gymnastics. We did after-school activities. She didn't always have loads of money, but we went home and, you know, we'd go to the library. She was so creative in terms of what she did with us. And especially for that generation of Black family, Black Caribbean family, she was very free in how she let us be, kind of thing, in terms of, she didn't say to us, we have to be this or have to be that. She gave us, or gave us the tools to just choose our own destiny.
Yeah, and Paul, that is just such a powerful gift for your mum to have given you, that gift of the enrichment and the opportunities to do your football and do all of the other things that you've done. You've said so much, Paul, and I just want to say, just by listening to you today, I just feel that you are incredibly strong mentally, to have overcome everything that you've overcome and still talk so openly about it in such a strong way. As you know, there are some people out there that suffer from anxiety, depression, all these sorts of things. And I'm sure you've had your own inner struggles, but 100%. you found a way to come out of that. And I think that's what's really important. I think that's a great share today from this podcast. But I'm going to bring it to a close now. So just going to say, from Taylor Communication Doctor and from Paul Wittig, adios.
Thank you for listening. If you would like to learn more, please visit our website at communicationdoctor.co.uk. To listen to more real stories, don't forget to subscribe.